This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Here's a truth, an uncomfortable truth, but it obviously is true. I have said for the longest time that men and women are obviously different, with different talents made for different things, but women have an ability to really guide the emotions of the room, the mood of the room, if you will. If you have a women walking into a room and they're smiling and happy and laughing, inevitably, the mood in that room will lift. And if you have a woman walk into the room with that thundercloud over her head like you used to see in the cartoons, sour, dour, everything sucks, it's going to drag down the whole mood of the room. You know this because you have a Democrat, sadly, in your life, maybe at work, maybe in your family. When the Democrat walks in, shows up to the family reunion, what happens? Oh, gosh, here we go. It happens. Now, the truth is, this is obviously not my wisdom. The truth is, this, frankly, it's biblical. I could sit and read for you a million different verses from the Bible about how a wonderful one will brighten your life, I'm paraphrasing, and a quarrelsome one, you'll hate your friggin' life. It's horrible. So let's focus on where we are here in the United States of America. We have a feminism problem, and that has created a miserable woman problem. And the thing is, it's more than just creating a bunch of 40-year-olds on Xanax who hate themselves and everyone else, only they love illegals. What it's doing is it's dragging down the mood of the entire country, because that's what happens when you're around miserable women. Okay, so how did we get so many miserable women? It was not always like this. I know they taught you in school that women used to be kept in chains and whipped in the country, but that's actually not true at all. Women were quite happy in this country for a very long time. Now they hate everything. Well, we had Ali Beth Stuckey on. She's one of my favorites. She really got to a point we talk about a lot on the show. Here she was.
All of us as women have this motherly instinct, whether or not we become biological moms. Like, as far back as we can remember, we loved dressing up our Barbies. I have three girls myself. Every object in our home becomes a baby or becomes a family, whereas with my nephews, every object becomes a gun. And so you see the differences so early on between boys and girls. And that doesn't just go away. Even if you become a high-powered career woman, that natural nurturing instinct will be channeled somewhere. And my argument is that when it's channeled not in the right direction, not towards children, whether they're your biological children or whether it's children that you volunteer with or care for in some way, when that mothering instinct is channeled towards politics, when it's channeled towards your profession, when it's channeled toward plants or channeled towards pets, then it gets perverted into something that actually makes women very bitter and very angry. And they have this mama bear instinct, especially with politics, where the illegal alien becomes their child. The woman seeking an abortion becomes their child. And we know as mama bears that we would do anything to stop our child from being harmed in some way. And I think that's why we see so much cruelty, so much anger. You think of someone like Renee Good, who is willing to run over a police officer. Like, it's that mama bear instinct, but channeled in these very wrong directions, that justifies this anger and cruelty and bitterness in so many of these liberal women.
I love that word she used, perverted. Now, we usually use that word differently, right? The creep that gets arrested near a school. But what it actually means is really to take something and divert it into something horrible and evil. Take something normal and divert it into something demonic. And that's what we've done with women in this country. Women are wonderful, should be celebrated, should be loved. Women deserve that. But women also have a role to play in society, and that is obviously to nurture, to support, to care, And what happens is these dirty communists, they take those wonderful instincts that all women are born with and they pervert them. Instead of being the mother of a child or something like that, instead, no, you're the mother of the illegal immigrant rapist. This is what we've allowed to happen for years, and the net result is misery for everyone. We're not making babies, not enough of them anymore, because the left, the feminists, have completely pulled themselves out of that pool. Men are more miserable. Women are more miserable. Drugged out. It is pulling all of it down. They went after women. They did it on purpose, and it's killing us. Now we get women like this.
My choice!
It's not good. It's more than just a funny thing to joke about. It's something we have to fix. We have to get rid of feminism. We have to get back to being a society that is led the right way, where men are more happy, women are more happy, where men and women actually get together and get married and make babies and everything is right. And we can, but we can't ever get there without actually talking about the problem in an honest way. How and why did we get here? Now, the good news is we just have Man Alive. We have some great people to talk to about this. Inez Stettman's going to talk to us. Megan Basham's going to talk to us. We have a pastor with actual guts who's going to join the show and talk to us about these things. How do we fix where we are? Where are we? And how do we fix it? We have a great special tonight on I'm Right. We'll be back. You know, there's such a difference between 5 cups of coffee energy and just natural energy. You know what I'm talking about, because I know you've done it. I certainly have done it. Where you've had a little too much caffeine, and now your hands are shaking like an alcoholic, and your palms are sitting there, and they're sweating. It's not a great energy, is it? It's barely better than the tired you felt beforehand. But natural energy, where you just feel good. You want to move. You want to get out. When you get home from work, instead of plopping down on the couch, you want to go for a walk. You want to do something. That's the good kind, and that's what Chalk will give you. Get a male vitality stack or a female vitality stack from Chalk. It's not just going to improve your mood. I get emails from 80-year-olds telling me they haven't had this much energy in years. Natural herbal supplements from Chalk. Chalk.com/JesseTV. Get a subscription. You're about to feel great.
Birth rate on Earth is so low that we're facing civilizational collapse unless the birth rate returns to a sustainable level.
Yeah, you've talked about this a lot, that depopulation is a big problem, and we
yes.
People don't understand.
Population collapse is one of the biggest threats to the future of human civilization, and that is what is going on right now.
I'm pro-human. I want more human beings, and we're losing them, and it is not good. And it's such an uncomfortable conversation, but we know Inez is not going to shy away from those. Joining me now, Inez Stettman, Senior Policy Analyst with the Independent Women's Forum. Inez, why aren't human beings having babies at the same rate they used to have babies? It's not an American problem or a Japanese problem or European problem. It appears to be a worldwide problem. What's the problem?
Yeah, I mean, I think the fact that it is worldwide makes it much harder to pin on the source that you and I are both more than happy to blame, which is feminism. I do think that culture is part of it, and the feminist culture is part of the dropping birth rate. But obviously, there's a larger component. When you see the birth rate dropping in the Middle East, for example, I have a hard time imagining that feminism is the primary culprit there. I think it's one of the most important questions that we can confront, but there isn't a clear answer. If it were, for example, a lot of people want to blame it on economics. But the fact is that during the Great Depression, the people were still having babies. Like in the Holocaust, people were still having babies. And it doesn't make sense to me, even though I do think that we should reorganize some of our policy to make it more family friendly and to reorganize our tax policy, for example, reorganize some of our paid leave policies the way that independent women wants to do, I think is a very good idea. But I don't know that is actually going to turn the birth rate around. We seem to have lost our fundamental drive as a species and our confidence in replicating both our civilization and ourselves.
And as let's focus here at home, because you're right, if we focus globally, I mean, it's just such a difficult problem to solve. And the truth is the reasons for the problems are probably different from country to country. Here in America, it's hard not to look at the numbers. The numbers say that right-wingers, they're getting married, they're making babies. Left-wingers have simply removed themselves from that pool almost entirely. Why?
Well, I think the values and the way that you see life obviously affects the decisions that you make about your family. First of all, they're one of the major drivers of both our political divide and of lack of family formation, let's say, and including lack of babies, is the fact that there are simply a lot more single childless women hitting 40, 45 than there used to be. There's the highest in recorded American history. And those women have, not only are they not having babies, they also have wildly different politics than the rest of America. If you look at married men, unmarried men, and married women, all of them vote GOP by anywhere from a few percentage points, like 5, right? There's no huge split. We're a divided country. But basically all those three categories of people lean slightly Republican. Unmarried women vote nearly 70% Democrat, right? So it's 70-30. They are the outliers, just like the politics of young women, young single women, is the outlier. We have all of this sort of discussion and discourse around whether young men are getting too radicalized or going too far right. But the reality is, when you actually look at the political center and where politics has gone for each one of these categories, what's happened is young women and then older single women vote extremely far left in vastly disproportionate numbers to all other categories. So more than their married, women's sisters, right? More than men who are either married or unmarried. They really are the Democratic base, and they're a very reliable one.
Okay, so that, of course, is going to beg the question of why? Because when you look at something like that logically, single women, unmarried women, they're frankly the most vulnerable to things like predators, criminals, savages we've brought in from El Salvador and things like that. And yet they vote reliably, unbelievably reliably for the politicians that turn those savages loose on them. Inez, can you walk me through the why?
Yeah, I mean, I do think there's something to the canard that is maybe overused, but I do think there is something to the analysis that women without families of their own, without husbands, without children, are channeling what are natural female instincts of empathy and care and taking care of others. They're channeling it into political activism. And I think they're kind of projecting those feelings onto, a million people or a billion people in the third world, all of whom who would like to come to the United States, right? But I do think that there is this relationship between making politics the center of your virtue signaling or what what you think about yourself as a good person. When you don't have those kinds of responsibilities to other people in a more direct way, you channel those feelings into these kinds of like political outreach, let's say, or political quote unquote empathy. But the fact is that the results of that quote unquote empathy couldn't be more, as you mentioned, couldn't lack any kind of sympathy or empathy more, for example, for the victims of people who commit crimes, for the ordinary people, the women and children who have to take the subway with people who get let out of prison on this ideological basis, right? It just, the results of it are actually very bad for women and children, including single women. But I tend to think that that's kind of an unshakable piece of our politics, that single women will continue to vote very far left for whatever reason. And I think that the Republican Party should, one, double down on outreach to men. I think we should show men what they stand to gain in politics. And two, to make that delineation between married women and unmarried women, and to press our advantage with married women who have husbands, who have sons, right, who are concerned about a lot of the same issues. They see their politics and worldview as connected to their family. Their interests are bound up within their families in a way that I think either single men or single women don't really have.
Inez, can you walk me through this? So we hop in a time machine and we go back to the year 1900, right? Not ancient history. Were single women a bunch of filthy, dirty commies back then too? Or is this a feminism turned single women that way over the last century or so? I know it's a ham-fisted way to ask the question, but you know how dumb I am. You know what I'm saying. Is this just single women are naturally that way?
Don't put yourself down, Jesse. I know you're a community college graduate. I can't tell you all the way back to 1900 because we didn't collect the data then, but we started collecting data on male and female voting rates in the 1950s. And what you see, and we didn't really break it down into categories then, but there's a strongly suggestive trend from the data, which is actually in the 1950s, women voted several points more Republican than men. Okay, so this has not always been a feature of our politics that women are left and men are to the right. At one point, women were voting more heavily Republican than men were. And this is the 1950s where the Republican Party was the more conservative of the two parties still. So it's not just that it's flipped or something. As you progress into the 70s, you start to see what we call now the gender voting gap, right? You start to see that opening up. And by the time you get to the 80s and 90s, it's very much where we see it here, which is anywhere from 10 to 12 point gap regularly between men and women voting. Similarly, if you go to 1950, you see that the percentage of single women in society was very low, and you see a pretty steady line up accelerating through the 1970s and 80s to the rate that we have today. So I think it's strongly suggested by the data. I can't say that it 100% proves my thesis, but I think it's strongly suggested by the data that what's happening is not that women are inherently left and men are inherently right, but specifically that the percentage of single women is going up over time and that they vote reliably, like way skewed to the left. Now, whether that's a feature of nature or whether that's a particular feature of our time and our politics and our particular feminism, I don't know. I mean, you could easily construct an argument saying, well, single women are more vulnerable. Maybe they need more government benefits, for example, and they're going to vote always for the big government party. But I, regardless of why that exists, I do think that's the reason for the gap, which there's so much. If you are on the right, you know you've heard from every imaginable outlet, both left and right, like, what do we do about the women's vote? Like, how do Republicans appeal to women? And the reality is Republicans do appeal to women. They just appeal to married women, and single women, you know, obviously one third of single women are interested in voting Republican. So this is not universal, but single women are very disproportionately left.
Does it just come down to feminism? I don't know, that's probably an oversimplification because there are a lot of factors. Does it just come down to the 1950s woman wasn't inundated with I am woman, hear me roar crap, and the modern woman is, and it's eaten her alive?
I think it's related to that, which is if you go back even to Betty Friedan, who popularized feminism in the United States in the early 60s, If you go back to Betty Friedan, oftentimes the most prominent women who are like the most prominent feminists are women, you know, not universally, but there's a stereotype for a reason, are women who have been very disappointed in their relationships with men. Betty Friedan had a very bad marriage. She, you know, did not have a good time. Her husband was abusive, at least according to her, who knows. But like the point is that I do think that the fact that feminism encourages women to see men's interests as oppositional to them is an obstacle to marriage, is an obstacle to family formation. And what we know is that it's an obstacle for women's happiness. If that's what you care about at the end of the day, I would argue that there are more important things in the world than women's happiness. However, if you take that as your metric, the most unhappy, and this is self-reported, the most unhappy women in America, the most heavily medicated, the most likely to say that they have been diagnosed with mental health issues like depression and anxiety, are single women. And the happiest women in America are married women with kids. This is a replicable finding. Brad Wilcox has great data on this. And even more so, you see that since the 1970s, specifically to your point about feminism, since the 1970s, when let's say the second wave of feminism went mainstream among women, you see that female happiness has been declining very steadily since the 1970s, both absolutely, meaning that the average woman in 1970 and the average woman in 1990, the one from 1970 was happier than the one from 1990, also relative to men. So men are more unhappy than they were with the situation in 1970, than they were in 1970, but man's happiness has actually dropped off less than women's have. So it really is a kind of, feminism is a self-harm ideology for women. It really doesn't lead to the sort of things in life that actually, on average, tend to make women happy. And look, I guess we'll go full circle and say that unhappy women vote Democrat.
Inez, appreciate you dropping some wisdom on us. Come back soon. All right. There is most definitely a spiritual angle to this, as we talked about a little bit in the open. Megan Basham talks about this a lot. She's going to join us next. I love sleeping. It's always been one of my favorite things. And I don't know, maybe I'm just getting old. I love it more and more now. And man, when you knock out 8 hours of solid sleep and you wake up the next day, don't you just feel like a completely different person than when you're tired all the time, sucking down coffee all day long? Man, you need to try some dream powder from Beam. For one, it's delicious. It's a cup of hot chocolate. And if I didn't tell you what was in it, and I just handed you a cup of it, you'd never know. It's got all kinds of magnesium, all kinds of things you see right there in it. But what happens is, natural ingredients, you sip on the cup of hot chocolate, and for me, it's 20, 30 minutes later, I just get a little tired. And I go crawl into bed and boom, I'm out. And when I wake up the next day, I feel fantastic. Not that heavy, groggy, miserable feeling like you took something to sleep. I just feel great. I don't even get up in the middle of the night. You want to sleep like that? Shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. Go get some. Well, as I mentioned in the opening, I don't care if it makes you uncomfortable, there's a spiritual angle to this. There most definitely is. You can't understand this without understanding that God made men and made women, and he made them for each other. And you can see example after example of it in the scriptures of when you have a wonderful one, your life is so much brighter. And when you have a crappy one, well, I'm paraphrasing, but he tells you to go sleep on the roof. Joining me now, Megan Basham, author of the wonderful book, Shepherds for Sale, reporter at the Daily Wire. Megan, there is a spiritual angle to all this feminism that has eaten up men and ruined women's happiness and ruined men, and it just kind of sucks.
Yeah, it does. And I'll tell you what sucks more, Jesse, is to know that, you know, to a large degree, this was engineered. This was something that, you know, back in the 1960s, the Johnson administration and the Nixon administration both worked with the UN and the Rockefeller Foundation to do things like pull home ec out of schools and to encourage women to pursue careers. And so that's what women did. And you now flash forward some 50, 60 years. And what you have are women who are increasingly unhappy. When you look at the rates of depression among women, it has skyrocketed. Alcohol abuse has skyrocketed. Rates of narcotic use has skyrocketed. So you see all of these indicators that women aren't happy. And at the same time, we have even Republicans pushing solutions on women that are not actually what they say they want. Even right now, you have about 2/3 to 3/4 of mothers with children under 18 who say that they would prefer not to work full time. And yet, what are the solutions we're being given? We're being given solutions of paid daycare, of federal daycare, of new entitlements, when we don't actually want that. What we want is to be home and to mother our children. So, you know, it's a really difficult problem when you, as someone who realizes the damage that feminism has been doing to our culture, has no side that you can really look to for the kind of solutions that, as you said, Jesse, are biblical. And that's a return to predominantly male leadership.
Oh, yes. Well, that's an uncomfortable conversation that certainly never gets brought up in about 99% of churches in this country. You'll see your pastor dancing like a professional around that issue about every single Sunday. But it does matter, and it's one of those conversations people don't want to have because pastors don't want angry emails. You know, podcasters, writers don't want angry emails. But the truth is, everyone was happier, men and women, when we just admitted it's better for the man to lead and the woman to love and support. It just made for a happier society.
Well, and I think we have to acknowledge the strengths of both sexes. There's a reason that God decreed that women are primarily focused on raising and nurturing children, because he gave us those hearts that feel for people. We do tend to prioritize people's emotions and people's feelings over the rules and over questions of justice. And that is why I think you see so many of these, for example, the protesters interfering with ICE, they tend to be women because they have been successfully convinced that what they're doing is initiating a protective instinct against these, you know, innocent, maligned, vulnerable immigrants. Now, we know that's not true, but that's the picture that they've accepted. And I think that's why they are out on the streets. And instead of at home mothering their family, they're trying to mother illegal immigrants. I think that's what we're seeing. And yeah, it is a problem that pastors won't talk about this fact. And I think we can look at a couple of things in the news just this week. You know, it was hysterical in that fraud hearing when the woman pastor, and, you know, I come from a denomination and from a doctrinal background where I don't believe in women pastors to begin with. But, you know, she sat there and it was very evident that she had very little biblical understanding. She could not identify the parable of the talents when it was being read to her. So what I think we see is that those kinds of quote unquote pastors, they deal in emotional slogans. They deal in, you know, the kind of lines that you would post on Instagram under a gauzy pink picture of, you know, a cup of coffee and a picture of the Bible. That's the depth that you get there. And that was so revealed in that exchange. And part of the problem is that women don't like to make people feel uncomfortable, and that is not the job of a shepherd. The job of a pastor is sometimes you have to confront sin. You have to call out lies. And I think part of the drift that we have seen in the church, which sets the tone for the culture, is that pastors have not been willing to do that. And instead, those women who you talked about, they're on the line. They're calling their pastors, they're badgering them. And that explains so much of the leftward drift that we've seen in the church, is because the pastorate has abdicated their responsibility and their leadership to women.
Megan, a little birdie whispered in my ear that you are actually writing a book about how feminism is destroying the West. If you can confirm these rumors and then explain yourself, I would appreciate it.
Yes, that's absolutely true. So, you know, the working title right now, I'm not sure this is what we'll ultimately go with, but we've been calling it Medicated, Miserable, and Alone: How the Female Unhappiness Crisis is Destroying the West, because that's what's happening, Jesse. Part of the reason is, I can give you the example of when we look at the cornerstone of a philosophy for American law. It's something called Blackstone's ratio. And it was a principle that Benjamin Franklin voiced, where he said, we would rather see 100 guilty men go free than convict an innocent man and punish an innocent man. With feminism, and what we've seen, for example, in Title IX and even in our formal courts, is this reversal where feminism says we would rather see 100 innocent men punished to ensure we get that guilty man. And so that has been the reversal of the bedrock of the American and Western understanding of law and justice. And it's being reversed in favor of this feminist idea of, instead, we have to do things like protect traumatized victims. So that means, for example, that an accused person doesn't have the right to confront their accuser if it's going to make the accuser feel bad or feel afraid. And so these are the kinds of shifts that we're seeing that are destroying the West, because we are throwing out hundreds of years of jurisprudence and understanding of what justice means in order to accommodate these sensitive feminine feelings.
Is there some sort of a connection with the LGBTQ demon mob freak movement and feminism? I mean, we see them aligned at their gross little parades and things like that. Are they one?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we just talked about that woman pastor, and that's one of the issues I can point to. Almost every single denomination that eventually shifted on the question of women in the pastorate, and they changed their minds and they said, no, even though scripture and the Apostle Paul tell us that the pulpit is reserved for men, when they made that shift to women in the pastorate, those same denominations, the mainline denominations, United Methodist Church, the Episcopalian Church, they eventually also embraced LGBTQ affirmation. And I think it is because both of those issues spring from the same tree. It's a question of what ordered gender is about, what instructions and what order does God lay out for the different sexes. Now, if we're going to get that wrong with men and women, at that point, it makes sense that we are willing to shift the boundaries on all kinds of questions of sexuality and gender. So I absolutely do not think that you can untangle those two issues. And it's why I think they so often go hand in hand. You know, just a quick example, if you look at the transgenderism issue, for example, polls were showing that men from the get-go never backed, for example, allowing biological men to play in women's sports. Men never backed the idea of transitioning minor children. It's changing, but women did. The majority of women did back that. They backed it in greater percentage points than men. And I think that tells you something. That is what people like Ali Beth Stuckey have been calling toxic empathy, because what it shows us is that these women felt like we are being kind, we are being loving by indulging what a confused child is telling us or what a perverse adult is telling us. And so I think that showed the damage and the destruction that the God-given good of female tenderness and sensitivity and empathy, those things are good. But when you exploit a good that God has given us, when you twist it, it becomes something wicked. It can become the most wicked thing.
Okay, Megan, I'm going to ask this question, and it's one that I've always found to be so incredibly fascinating. I talk about it on my show sometimes. You see, you've talked about how miserable these feminists are, how they're drugged out, they're miserable, they hate themselves, they hate everything around them. So why do young women, when they look at like someone like you, and then they look at a miserable feminist, why choose that path? When I mean, it's not like there's happy ones. They're all freaking miserable with crew cuts and Subarus and screaming all the freaking time and Adderall prescriptions. They're all miserable. Why would you choose that path just for your own happiness? If you're a young lady, why walk down the road where everyone on the road hates themselves?
Well, you know, I think it's easy to dump on this generation of young women for that, Jesse, but I want to actually turn the focus back on those of us on the right and within the church who know the truth and have been reticent and shy about speaking it because it's culturally unpopular or uncomfortable. So, you know, we have had church leaders who, instead of acknowledging we have an incredibly feminized culture now that is dominated by women in just about every field, you know, you look at women now earning the majority of PhDs, the majority of degrees, they are dominating the medical field, the legal field, just any center of power is now tending to be female dominated. And the church's answer to that has been to stand up and say, how can we mirror that and discuss how we are going to put women in positions of power as well, instead of speaking truth and saying, women, this is not the thing that is going to bring you your highest level of happiness and life satisfaction. So the church has been unwilling to say that. And then you look at the GOP and the political right, and they have been unwilling to talk about the kinds of solutions that would satisfy that created order of what women are designed to be. Instead, what they offer is just sort of a Bud Light version of, you know, the full beer that the Democrats are offering. And I think that's a significant problem too. You cannot convince women of the truth if no one is willing to speak it.
That's pretty well said. You know what? We're signing off with that because I can't top that. Megan, I appreciate you very much. Go buy her book, Shepherds for Sale. It's very, very good. Megan, thank you. I appreciate you. All right, we're going to talk to a pastor who's not afraid to speak the truth. Next. Vietnam was obviously a really controversial time in our country. And I don't know about you, I hold Vietnam veterans in such high regard for all the terrible things they had to go through. And to be honest, you talk to them, they still go through today. Still ravages their mind today. Did you know that the CEO of PureTalk, he did two tours with Mac V. Sog in Vietnam? You realize that? Why is this patriotic cell phone company, this mobile company, why do they hire Americans? No one does that. They did it long before hiring Americans was cool. You call PureTalk, you're talking to an American. They are American as apple pie. They believe in this country, the red, white, and blue. They support veterans. And you'll pay less for your cell service? Way less? You don't need Verizon, AT&T, or T-Mobile. Go to puretalk.com/JesseTV. Have you ever looked around and said, why is everything gay now? It's awful. You can't watch the news. You can't take your kids to a new children's movie without a couple lesbians making out in the park. Everything's freaking gay now. Well, maybe because we as men shirked our duties and handed the entire country over to women. Joining me now, Pastor J. Chase Davis, author of a wonderful book, Offensive Christianity. Pastor, it's easy to point fingers at women and say, you did this, but women are not commanded to lead. We are commanded to lead. Why are we not leading?
Well, it's been a long series of failures on the part of men, and I don't say that to berate men or beat them down, but it is well overdue time for men to kind of assert themselves and rise up. That's what I talk about in my book, Equipping Men, on how to kind of regain their strength as men, their authority as men. Of course, what you and I would, and all Christians would agree on, is that as men lead, it's a blessing. This is not to the detriment of women. It's actually to love women, to help them flourish as God designed them to flourish. And so a lot of it has to do with a lot of wicked ideology that has come up in the past, which has really demurred and suppressed the kind of masculine agencies, the way I describe it, the ability to assert oneself, to enter into conflict. Men are hardwired for aggression, to go out and have ambition, to try to conquer things. This is the natural kind of way that God made men. Now, some of that, of course, has been corrupted by the fall, and men can do great deeds of evil. And so we, as Christians, believe that should be stopped, and we should not promote that. We should promote righteousness. And so we want to encourage men to not give in to lies, that they have no agency, that they can't be assertive. And unfortunately, too many Christian churches teach a gospel, teach a version of the faith where it seems like men aren't welcome, that men can't come in and thrive. They're not educated on fatherhood, their responsibilities as husband, how to advance in the workplace, anything like that. Instead, they're taught a version of Christianity, which basically teaches men they need to become women. And the best and more mature version of themselves would be as if they could just adopt the feminine nature, be more inclusive, be more empathetic, be more nurturing, and that's what it means to be a good Christian. In fact, they'll go so far as to teach pacifism in these churches, where we can't even defend ourselves, because apparently this is what Jesus taught. He didn't, but this is what they would promote in this kind of church. And so there's a lot of churches that need to take responsibility, but also teach the truth of God's word regarding the nature of men and women, and particularly to men. Blaming our problems on women is not going to be helpful. In fact, that's part of what Adam did in the garden. We don't want to blame women. It's easy, and I see this going around sometimes online and other places, like, you know, it's the women's fault and woman's fault, and we just, you know, if they could do better. And it's like, sure, I bet they have issues, and we know they have issues that they need to deal with. But if men can simply assert themselves and recover their kind of biblical understanding of what it means to be a man and get involved and go on offense for the truth of God, then things will radically change. We need to discard a vision of manhood which teaches them that they're either toxic, they're defunct, that the very natures that make them men are somehow unchristian.
Pastor, what would you say to a man right now, because I'm certain they are out there, who feels weak, feels like he's not strong enough to stand up to all this, and he wants to change it? Of course, it's inside of him. That's how God made him, but he doesn't even know where to begin. Can you give him some guidance, some biblical guidance?
Absolutely. The first thing you must do is get right with your Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. That is like fundamental. That's, I'm a pastor. That is what I'm going to promote and preach. You've got to get right with your Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, by dying to sin and being raised to a new life. You need to put your faith in Christ and repent of your disobedience, because part of being a man is taking responsibility. You have to be able to take responsibility for how you've displeased the Lord in unrighteousness and aim to please him in your life. Of course, out of that flows action. We are to be men of action. In my book and other places, I get into this. I say, look, men, we need to be action-oriented. We need to have agency. And part of that is going to be having agency over our very bodies. And so a lot of times, I mean, you talk to any guy who started working out or getting into fitness, it can be very hard, intimidating to get into these activities. But I think it's crucial for the development of the soul of men to be fit, to be healthy, to not be obese, to not be lazy and a glutton. We need to get men active again. They need to be working out, getting involved in physical activity. Many men are sedentary today. They're bored by their jobs. They're sitting in front of screens. It's not inspiring. An easy way to do that is to get in the gym. get strong. And what we find actually in science, social science studies and physiological studies, is that as you work out, as you develop that competency, that actually leads to better life outcomes, not just physically, but mentally. More mental clarity, less depression, and you begin to have a view of life that's less passive. And I think for a lot of men, they just feel like, oh, this is happening around me. What can I do? I have no control. That's the exact wrong attitude to have. As men, as Christian men, we have an attitude of, what has God given me to steward? And I'm going to maximize the profits on that to the best of my abilities. Jesus always rebukes the one who buries his talents because he's passive and he's scared and he doesn't know what to do. He rewards the one who invests, who advances, and who builds the kingdom wherever he goes. And so whether you have lots of influence or little influence, the best thing you can do today is take action. Stop ruminating and stop having all these regrets about, I wish I could have done this differently, or what can I do? Get up off the sofa, work out, go bench press, do a push-up, do something, get active, and then start leading your family. A simple way is to lead your family in family worship. I mean, that can be scary for a man who may not know his Bible, but simply reading the Bible out loud, praying for your family and over your family, and then leading them in a song like Amazing Grace or something like this. This is a simple way to lead your family spiritually, because your family needs that. They long for that presence from you. And you can just do these simple activities and reject kind of the fear of rejection that a lot of men have. They're afraid. What if I'm incompetent? What if, you know, what if I embarrass myself? Get over it. We need to be men. Yeah, you may make a fool of yourself. Why should we be worried about this? We need to live according to God's word, advance his kingdom in every possible avenue.
Amen. I make a fool of myself every day. Doesn't stop me. Pastor, I appreciate you very much. His book is Offensive Christianity. I would highly recommend it. We have a light in the mood you will enjoy. Next. All right, so that's a lot of talk about feminism and things like that, but that might lead you to believe that I don't support women. Well, I attended, you remember Women's March, that big feminist movement? Maybe you don't remember this.
Love you.
Love your t-shirt.
Run for president, please.
Right now, we gotta be in this fight. Thank you.
Thank you so
Thank
much.
Thank you. Take
Appreciate
care.
You. He's going down tonight.
Tell me how many women are gonna die if the Senate confirms that.
I have no idea how many women will die.
What then, about minorities?
Minorities too. Take a stand, it don't have to hide. Yeah, I'm
gay
sure.
People.
Oh yeah, sure. Gay people, they can own.
Eskimos.
Yeah, probably. I gotta be a man. I can't let it slide. I am a real American. Fight for the rights of every man. I am a real American.
To him, this is Jesse Kelly. He said he's undercover. He tweeted, "Here, I'm undercover." He's a conservative, Fox conservative radio host. Appears on Fox News, a contributor to the Federalist. This man is a liar. He's mocking women's pay. He is pretending to be a protester to humiliate women. We will not allow him to go undercover and make fun of us and take our words out of context. This is Jesse Kelly. He's a conservative radio host. He is a Fox News contributor. He is a Federalist contributor. Do not talk to this clown. Do not talk to this clown. He tweeted that he is undercover to mock women.
Hey, I'm told I'm not supposed to talk to you. When it comes crashing down, it hurts inside. You gotta take a stand, it don't have to hide.
This bus right here behind you is literally killing the Eskimos, isn't it?
That is correct.
That's what Trump 2020 looked like, and that's what Trump 2024 looks like. Right there.
It is pushing out poisonous gas, heating up the atmosphere, and causing the poles to melt.
I It's my senator's office. I have a right to be there.
You have a right to be there. That's your senator.
Yes, absolutely.
Do you feel like she objectified you?
I feel like I'm not.
I feel like she did. Yeah, you're right. She's not listening to you. It's pathetic.
Yeah, I agree. Take trouble for very
long. Got this.
I'll see you tomorrow.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty on demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.